Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 14, delivered on October 4, 2018. The title of this lecture is Interest Rates and Risk.
Today, interest rates and risk. We have a market where obviously today the investors have bailed from stocks in droves. As they sold their stock positions, that freed up money, and that money is now going to go to bonds. It's going to go to bonds. They got to do something with the money. It's not going to just go under the, well, it could go under their mattresses. They're going to buy bonds. As they buy bonds, what happens to the price of bonds as investors buy them? What happens to the price of the bonds as they go up? And as bond prices go up, what happens to yields on bonds? Do you remember the relationship? Go down. Absolutely. Give yourself a cookie. That's exactly right. That's good. So, in other words, we should see bond prices going up, so bond yields should be going down. So let's see if bonds, if treasuries, which would be the safest kinds of bonds, if investors who were bailing out of stocks used the money to buy bonds. Let's look at the treasury yields right now. And we go to treasury yield curve chart. Go to the U.S. daily. Uh-oh, what's going on here? Bond yields are not going down. Bond yields are going, 2 days ago, 3.05 on the 10-year. Yesterday, 3.15 on the 10-year, 3.19 on the 10-year today. So the yields are going up, which means the prices are going down. That means that investors are selling the bonds too. Prices on stocks are going down. Prices on bonds are going down. So where would they be going from here? If the investors are selling their stocks and selling their bonds, what's the next stage in flight to quality? Gold. Well, let's see if gold. Let's see, the spot on gold. The price of gold went down. Gold price per ounce changed. It closed at $1,199.20, down 50 cents on the day. From stocks to bonds, from bonds to gold, from gold to? No. Bullets. That's the old saying. Where the hell? This is very odd because, you see, what I'm showing you is how we do the forensics. We trace. Okay, I found your body. It's dead. So I'm going to track back to see where, I don't care what happened. I need to follow the killer. I go over here. Aha. He had a knife in his hand, but the knife is gone. So I go over here. Well, you had the knife, and then it's gone. And I go to you. Aha, I've got it. No knife. Wait, what's going on? See, there's the problem is that in a case like this, this is the one like in 2008. On that morning, September the 15th, we saw massive amounts of money being withdrawn from the money markets on the East Coast banks. Okay, good enough. Someone is pulling money hard. So obviously they're pulling money out and they're putting it into something safe like bonds. No, bond prices were not going up with buying pressure. Okay, they must have been buying gold. No, gold prices weren't going up. There was no buy pressure on gold. Okay, let's look at silver, platinum, copper, whatever. Let's look at hog bellies. Let's look at anything. We couldn't find a price spike. We couldn't see where the money was going. That's what's going on today. The money is going out of stocks. Okay, it's going to bonds. That means bond prices would be going up, which means bond yields would be going down. Bond yields are going up, so bond prices are going down. So what's the next thing? Okay, they're going into the commodities market. They're buying gold. Nope, gold is going down. Where the hell is the money going? That's the thing that we have to ask. Do I have the answer? I'm not sure I want to know the answer, but I think I have the answer. But we'll talk about that later. But what that means is that essentially, look around you as you're walking home and notice, see if you're actually sitting in a handbasket, because if you are, you know where that handbasket is headed. Oh, you're good. You're good. You see, but this is what we do. I mean, it's the fascinating part. It's interesting. But it's interesting in the sort of the way where, you know, if you were right when, where, let's say that a nuclear bomb lands right there. It was an accident. One of those bombers dropped it. You know, the instant before it explodes, that's kind of cool, though. You know, look at that iron coming down. Whoa! Poof. Oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you don't. You know that, you see, you got to understand, though, you've got enough knowledge now. I mean, you guys have enough knowledge now to see what I'm talking about. Yeah, the stock market went down. So the money, obviously, they were selling stock. You sold your stock, so you got money. You got to do something with it.
Is it foreign markets?
Well, what, want to see, let's see if what the, foreign exchanges. Let's see what's happening on foreign exchanges today. Foreign exchanges. We could look at the Nikkei. Stock markets today. Z, no, Z. I see it corrected it. Autocorrect. I know these kinds of things. Global indices. Okay, S&P, NASDAQ, Nikkei, down. So the Japanese, it was a sell-off in the Japanese market. It wasn't a major. That was only 0.5%. So, I mean, that wasn't anything. But it wasn't any spectacular rise. The Nikkei didn't do it. Okay, let's look at the Hang. The Shanghai was down 0.5% today. The Nikkei was down. Oh, well, that's saying, actually, that is that saying more?
Amsterdam's doing pretty well. That's
good. Amsterdam? Oh, Amsterdam. Okay. Where was? Oh. Well, that's because they buy weed. Okay, the Hong Dong. Mother of God. Shut up. Down. Australia. Interesting, the Moscow market. Whoa. Russia's market was up 1.22%, but that's Russia. Because they lie. Oh, that's got to be, there's got to be something wrong with that map. That must be reporting. That's got to be a day or two behind. Yeah, I have a feeling that's a day or two behind. But European stock markets, world markets, CNBC, let's see. If I went into Standard & Poor's, I just don't want to go through the mess of trying to fight my way out. And all we get is that was clickbait. All these clickbait things. International market data, stock indexes, Wall Street Journal should have some good stuff. Okay, and I'm going to be going back here anyway. Okay, the Hang. No more, no reports. Asia Pacific. Jakarta. I wonder why these aren't reporting here.
Did they
close it? Oh, I hope they didn't. That would be a rather significant thing. But as you can see, the ones that are reporting all kind of suck. Oh, it's overnight, so they're not reporting because it's nighttime there. That's the problem. Okay, well, it suffices to say that we don't see any place right now where the money went into a foreign market. So the question still stays open. Where did the money go? This is the question that we were asking on September the 15th of 2008. Where the hell is that money headed? It clearly was being pulled out of banks. And in this case, it's clearly being pulled out of stocks. But we don't see a price spike where it is going. So that's an issue for us that we might want to be concerned about. But, you know, that's your problem. You're the ones who are going to be out there looking for a job. Now, something that I do want to talk about here. And I'm going to ask a couple of you this question, so please don't be offended when I ask this. Okay? Sir, do you have a skeleton?
Yes.
Good. You? Good, good. Madam, skeleton?
Yeah.
Bro, we have one both. Yeah. Skeleton?
I hope so.
You do. You see, here's an interesting thing. We all have a skeleton. You don't see anyone that's like an amoeba blob. You don't see that, do you? Everyone's got a skeleton. Good. You're saying, why the hell are they? Okay, you see, it's not the skeleton, it's the meat suit that's different. Some people have a big meat suit. I have a brother, he weighs 700 pounds. He's a very big man in his business. And then I had a student a couple of years ago, she weighed 80 pounds. Small meat suit. Different meat suits for different people. You're looking at me like, where is this going? Let me explain what I'm talking about here. You see, when we say the interest rate, there really isn't one interest rate. There are many different interest rates. But just like people who all have a skeleton, there is in interest rates an underlying base rate, a rate that is underneath all of the rates that you could see. So, for example, you, madam, do want to own a house someday, right? Okay, you would, and so does he. Your dream is to have a nice, are you going to stay in the Bloomington Normal area or are you going back to Chicago?
Probably Chicago.
Okay, you want to have a nice house in Schaumburg, let's say. And that'll run you about $250,000, but you've got an incredible job. And so clearly you're going to get preferred financing on your mortgage. You, sir, are wanting to buy a double wide house trailer on the south side of Decatur. You plan to put a really nice skirt around it and maybe have some Velvet Elvis paintings in the living room and maybe one of those wraparound couches for those lovely nights that you plan. And you work as the assistant manager at a Jiffy Lube on the south side of Decatur, and you also do Elvis impersonations for children's birthday parties on the weekends. The clown outfit that you were wearing scared the kids, so you went to Elvis impersonation, and you said to the kids, you ain't nothing but a hound dog. Okay, anyway.
All right.
We're good. Do you understand that he's probably not going to get as good of financing? He's not as trustworthy. He is more likely to default on his loan. Another thing that's going to happen here, too, is that you, madam, want to do a 15-year loan. You see, in 15 years, interest rates can move around, but not as much as his loan, which is 30 years, where there's more time for interest rates to move. There's more volatility risk. Volatility is risk. So there's more risk in his loan that's 30 years than there is in your loan that's 15 years based upon the volatility of interest rates. Okay? Think about it this way. Now, let me explain this one to you. Have you ever had, you were trying to eat your dinner and you had a fly bothering you? Well, now, if you catch it in a cup, it can go. It can't go very far. But if you let it out in the room, oh boy. Okay, more room for it to fly around. Time creates risk simply because more time allows for more events to happen. You, sir, are going to live through the night. There's a very high probability that nothing is going to kill you overnight, right? But who's to say what's going to happen over the next 10 years? There's more uncertainty about your life. I mean, in any given night, it's very unlikely that you're going to be run over by a train that derailed and went right through the middle of the campus. But over 10 years, ding, 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 it could happen. There's more risk over longer periods of time. That's what we call maturity risk. And that's one of the things we add extra onto an interest rate is for longer term loans, there's more risk that interest rates will move adversely to the lender or to the investor in general. So, in other words, over a period of 5 years, interest rates can move, but there's a very low probability that they can do something really cray-cray. But over a period of 30 years, those things can move a lot. Interest rates can. And if they move at all, interestingly enough, it doesn't matter whether they go up or down. That is volatility, and that creates risk. So underneath all interest rates, there is a skeleton that all interest rates have, a base rate. We call it the risk-free rate. We actually can't see it directly. We can see things that are very close to it. But then on top of that, different kinds of investments, carry different combinations of these extra risks. And that's what investors have to put money in for. Let me show you here. Watch. Now, if I were to talk about an interest rate, all interest rates, regardless, would have that skeleton, that R sub F, the risk-free rate, the one I talked about in the last lecture, which is the real rate of return, in other words, supply and demand dynamics on the money supply, and an expected inflation premium, pi E. All interest rates are going to carry that foundation, that substrate there. But then, on top of that, is going to be something we call the risk premium. It has three pieces to the risk premium. The first one represents risk of default. The risk that an investor, especially a lender, faces that someone's not going to pay all or part of a loan. So in other words, a large creditworthy corporation would have a very small default premium. The government of the United States would have no default premium. Some say, yeah, there's a tiny one, but for all practical purposes, a government treasury of any duration, it's going to pay. I'm the government, United States government, you, madam, lend me money. You have no fear. You should have no concern at all. I will pay you back. Well, how do I know that? Well, if I don't have the money, I'll just print some for you. Well, what happens if the printing press is? Oh, well, we'll attack a country and take all of its assets like we do. We're American, for God's sake. We'll pay you. We're good for it. Will never default. So a U.S. Treasury, regardless of whether it's a 1 month or a 30-year, it'll pay. So there's no default premium. But a corporate AAA has a tiny, and it's kind of interesting because we can use the difference between the two yields to see exactly what that default premium is. So the first one is the default premium. And it varies. Let's try this one. The default premium, sir, on a home mortgage, would that be a very high number or a small number? Oh, let's try. Low. Why? Because if you default on the loan, I'm the banker, I'll just take your house. I'll take your house. It's collateralized. It's backed. And, oh, well, I heard these bankers really lost a lot on these loans because they the mortgage was $150,000 and all they could get was $120,000 for the house. So there's a big, no. People don't seem to understand, and our politicians just are so stupid. They don't get it. Whenever you take out a loan, the bank actually has a part of your payment is an insurance premium that covers the gap between the what they'd sell the home at and what you owed on it. It's called MAGIC. The Mortgage Assurance Guarantee Corporation provides the insurance. You pay it. They took your house. And then they said, oh, God, it's worth $30,000 less than you owe. Well, they just get the insurance. You were paying mortgage insurance on it. So they're covered. They're indemnified against the gap. So, yeah.
They just get to resell it.
Yeah. Oh, they'll sell it for $120,000 because they don't want REO, real estate owned. But, I mean, they'll say, all right, insurance company, MAGIC, we took this house. They owed $150,000. We kicked them out. We sold it for $120,000. We're down $30,000. But they were paying the insurance premiums for the gap. And so they get the $30,000 back. Sucks, doesn't it? Interesting that people don't know that. And also, interestingly enough, you, by law, they cannot make you pay that mortgage premium after the loan-to-value ratio goes below 80%. So, but almost no one knows that, and almost everyone continues to pay those mortgage premiums for the whole life of the loan, even when the loan is worth less than 80% of the value of the asset that is the house. Anyway, okay, the default premium. Let's try this one. A car loan. What would you say for a car loan? Does that have a large default premium or a small default premium on a car loan? What would you say?
Small.
It's not as small as a mortgage loan because the problem is with a car, as soon as you drive it off the lot, its value drops. So there's going to be a gap in there, an exposure. So the risk R sub D, the default premium on a car loan, would be higher, but it's still collateralized. How about a credit card? Well, a credit card, is that a high R sub D or a low R sub D? Yeah, that's why credit card interest rates are so stupidly high. It's simply because the default premium is very high because if you don't pay it, what do? There's nothing they can do to you. You know, they can write you very bitchy letters, but that's it. Believe me, I know. I've got my own collection of... No, I do. Okay. Now, interestingly enough, student loans used to also... Now, the government does student loans now, but back in the day, student loans have almost no default premium at all, simply because if you don't pay your student loans, they come after you in black helicopters with guys rappelling down and to shoot your ass. I mean, they'll take everything you own. They'll shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and do all kinds of terrible things to your favorite stuffed animals. Okay, so, yeah, so student loans have a low default rate, and they're also, of course, guaranteed by the government, but they're going to get you. They'll just take away your tax refunds. They'll attach your wages. They'll do whatever they want to you. And you can't even go into bankruptcy to get out from under your student loans. So there's very little on that. So there, right there, you would see that the interest rate is highly, highly dependent upon that default premium that is carried in there. Now, the next one is the one I was talking about, time. It's called the maturity premium, R sub M. The maturity premium is a nasty. Okay. I'm going to borrow. You are not showing sufficient fear of me, madam, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to give you this one, okay? I am a banker, and you want to borrow money for a home loan. Now, let's say that I do this loan for 6% for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. Now, you're in this house about 3, 4, 5 years. Suppose that mortgage interest rates go down. Let's say to 4%. What are you going to do? You might not know, actually. Have you ever heard of refi? Refinanced it. You're just going to borrow the money again at the lower rate. See, I am damaged by this. I was expecting to get 6% from you for 30 years. But you saw interest rates go down, so you've refinanced with another bank. You pay off my loan. I know, and then I get the money back. I can't lend it at anything but the 4%. So my cash flow is damaged by that downstroke on the interest rates. And the longer the loan is, the more likely interest rates are going to do that. In 2 years, probably not. In 5 years, a little more. In 20 years, oh, there's a good chance. Now let's talk about the other side of it. Did you know, madam, that the typical homeowner sells a house in 7 years?
I did not know
that. It's true. You move on. Now I want you to think about your circumstance. You're going to, let's say, you buy a nice, modest home. After a couple of years, you have a child. Then you have another one. And after about 3 years, you have a third. Now, you've still got that nice little home. We expect you to move out, get a new mortgage, and pay us off in about 7 to 9 years. Now, you've got a 6% mortgage. What happens if mortgage interest rates go to 12%? You're not going to sell that home. You're going to keep that 6% mortgage. You are going to figure out. Now, you've got now 5 kids. Your brother moved in. He started that running that odd, strange operation out in the garage where you don't come in, man. And he comes out with a mask on. And then your husband's ex-wife moves in with their 5 kids and 2 from another marriage and said, dog, you're going to just dig holes and let them live in there. You're not going to give up a 6% loan. I'd love to have you buy a new house, pay off the mortgage, because I could then relend the money at 12%. You aren't going to do that. So in other words, if interest rates go up, I'm screwed as the lender. So either way, going down, you'll refi. Going up, you won't ever sell that house. You'll keep that mortgage. So, and the longer the term of the mortgage, the more likely interest rates are going to do either up or down, and either way, I'm dead. You, sir, are drunk. You're driving down the road. Now, you're going to drive 50 yards. Not much can happen in 50 yards. But suppose you have to drive to Chicago in that condition. Bong, 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 bong. You're going to bounce off everything. The longer, the more likely there is to be something that will deviate from the mean. The longer a track is. That's why we have more uncertainty as we project further into the future, because there's more possibilities of things happening. And tonight, sir. Yeah, I promise you, I'm absolutely sure that nothing is going to happen to you with respect to alien motherships and abductions. However, over 5 years, over 20 years, sucked into the mothership, taken to the Andromeda Galaxy where they experiment on you and find out that, yeah, we don't want to experiment on these people anymore because they are weird. And they bring you back here, okay? You know, madam, did you know that I run a ghost hunting club here?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you go on one ghost hunting thing, you're hardly ever going to find anything, no problems, right? Okay, you do 2. Probably nothing. You do about 48, like I've done. That's when you are pretty certain that you are going to run into something that's demonically possessing your students. And then that's a big problem, because then you have to explain to their parents why they're saying, I eat dog flesh. Okay, now, The last one. When you have a home loan, you get a home loan, sir. You get a home loan. I'm the banker. I'm your banker, and I'm forever with you. We're together your whole life and all that. You borrow from me, you're borrowing from your hometown bank and your hometown banker. No, you're not. As soon as you walk out that door, I'm going to sell that loan. I'm going to get rid of that. I package the loans together into lumps. Every other banker in the country does it. We don't want your damn loan. All we want to do is collect a fee for processing the payments. Your loan and all these other loans are sold off in big packages to these massive secondary mortgage markets. They're called Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, all those. And they put those into super bonds. They create super bonds worth hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. And sometimes they'll carve up the cash flow. Okay, this super bond has the interest payments. This super bond has the payments on the principal. This super bond pays when the loans pay off early, if they pay off early. This super bond over here does this. They are sold off immediately. They are so liquid. Because they are standardized, mortgages are such standardized, okay, think about it this way. When you were a kid, did you ever blow bubbles? Did you ever see two bubbles that come together and they go like this? And they hold together because they're all perfectly symmetric. And so you've got a big, big double butt bubble, right? I got in so much trouble when I called it that. Okay, now. But we have, no, it was a double bubble bubble. I can't even say it. Okay, now, we've grown up. We don't do that kind of stupid stuff anymore. You know what I do instead? I tried it last week. Silly putty and slime. Tried to get them to go together. They didn't fit. Different chemical compositions. I mean, the kids that were watching me do this, I was explaining to them the differential viscosities, and you had this weird Kelvin-Helmholtz boundary that was governed by stochastic partial differential equations. I explained that to them, and they got scared and told their parents that I was being odd. But they don't fit together very well, you see, because they're different things. That's why it's easy for banks to unload mortgages. They have a high liquidity. You can dump them. I lend you money. I can get rid of that and sell the loan to someone else. But if it's a car loan, they are not standardized enough. You might buy a Maserati. You might buy a Bentley. You would buy a Nissan Juke. You would buy a Prius. Really, Prius? I mean, God. Some of your cars were very cool in those. I wanted to see those. But some of you, wow. Okay. Anyway. So you see, it's not as easy to package those up and sell them to secondary markets. The same is true with credit card debt. Credit card actually, they're not standardized in some way. So they have lower liquidity. So in other words, and even when I was a stock broker, I ran my penny stock house. Even with stocks, I'd have someone who would want to sell 600 shares. The posted settle was $125 a share, $1.25 a share. And you'd have a person, okay, I want to sell 600 shares. I was a market maker, I'd buy them, but I'd buy them for 80 cents. People would, but it says $1.25. Yeah, but how long do you suppose it's going to take me to unload those? I'll have those 600 shares in inventory for the next 20 years. My liquidity is low. I can't unload them quickly. So, Laura, and think about this. Okay, madam, you. You come from a very, very good family. Very good family. And you just need a loan for $100. And you go to this lender. Now, you're going to have your lawyers write up a wherefore and all that. These are the terms and conditions, gold filigree. And you will provide that to this lender. And she'll charge you an interest rate. Maybe 6%. Well, you see, if she needed that money back, she could probably sell it to you fairly quickly. You would buy it from her for close to the face value because it's good. It's clean. It's clearly from a high-quality person. Now, however, you, madam, 30 years from now, you're back in Chicago, you're successful, you're walking down Monroe Avenue, and there's this really weird elderly person sitting there. You, I recognize you. I was your professor for FIL 240, autumn semester 2018. Yeah, I was your professor. Damn, you've made it good. I need to borrow some money. $100. I got a piece of toilet paper here. I'll write I owe you $100. Wait, I got that tube in my kidney is leaking. There, okay. Right? Okay, so you're going to charge me more because I give you that piece of toilet paper with my IOU written on my signature. I mean, you're not going to be able to unload that anyway. You're going to have to hope to God that I pay you off. Now, there's obviously going to be a higher default premium because, you know, I'm not good for the money. But also, you could get your money back easily by selling her promissory note. It's on nice paper. It's from a creditworthy source. Mine, you're not going to be able to unload it. You're stuck. So there'd be a higher maturity premium on that one. A higher liquidity premium. So that's the third one. Is the liquidity premium. Now, putting these all together, interest rates tend to fluctuate, but these guys really don't drive the process of interest rates in general going up or going down, except for, well, the R sub D, in bad times, there is going to be a higher default premium across the board because everyone's going to have a higher chance of defaulting. Now, the maturity premium in times of great uncertainty, the maturity premium will get bigger because there's more possibility of up and down. Oddly, recessions tend to lower maturity premiums. But I'm going to start with a quick example. Interest rates right now are going up. They are definitely, you saw it. I mean, that was a pretty, it's really moving upward. As a matter of fact, I can even show you a little bit more seriously. Okay. With stockcharts.com. Here we go. Let's move out here. The black is 6 months ago about. Look what's happening. Do you see the interest rates, those baseline interest rates are rising across the board? Watch again. Look at them. They're pushing, and now they've just jumped upward. Do you see it? They've jumped. These are baseline. These are treasuries, and treasuries tend to be one of the ways that other interest rates are stacked on top. Treasuries are like the skeletons in some way, okay? So interest rates are going up. Now, interest rates are going up. So what will that do to the market for people getting home mortgages? What will that do? Go. Actually, it'll do exactly the opposite. Yeah. Think about it this way. You know interest rates are going up. You take a finance class from one of the greatest professors that has ever lived. He says interest rates are going up. Absolutely. We have different terms. I call it the flare. Before interest rates go too high, if interest rates are going up, you will see actually a spike in borrowing. People will borrow for their homes right now. Corporations will issue debt right now. Even though interest rates are going up, they know they'll be bad within 6 months. And so you see this boost in activity leading in. You know very well. You know very well that there's going to be a zombie apocalypse, madam. Are you going to wait to buy Spam at the store, or are you going to buy it now?
Stockpile.
Absolutely. Maple flavor is to die for. And they got the with cheese, and they got this one bacon flavor. I kind of favor, you know, I'm originalist, this plain Spam. Weirdo. Okay. You see, there it's actually kind of like a hoarding effect. Before the storm, you know the storm's coming, you know it's going to kick our butts, and so before it, you will see economic activity actually increase. And what that does is it causes the pundits and the politicians to say, see, look how great everything is. We're great economy. Well, actually, that's a sign that it's about to... When you die, you're lying on the bed, everyone's around you. I actually almost became a Jesuit priest. I'm thinking of becoming that when I retire. So I'm there giving you your last rites, and they're about to put the sheet over your head. You suddenly, I'm feeling great. Scared the hell out of everyone. The nurses ran out of the room, you know, and all that. Then you die. Okay? Happens. That's what oftentimes will happen with an economy is there will be that, as I call it, the flare right before the recession begins. And this is nasty. The rates are just jumping really fast. So that would probably indicate that you're going to see a last-minute borrowings for home mortgages, corporations trying to get bond issues out at coupon rates that are lower before the coupon rates skyrocket and all that kind of great stuff. Okay, so... So always keep that in mind. Now let me tell you one last thing about, I've mentioned it before, I'll describe it again, that, okay, if I had, let's say, the 30-year treasury right now, matter of fact, I can even Treasury bond, the 30-year Treasury bond. Let me try to grab where it is right now. Treasury yield curve. Right now, as of right now, today, the 30-year Treasury is at 3.35%. Now, remember that the Treasury will have the skeleton in it, it will have no default premium, and it will have a 30-year maturity premium. It'll have no liquidity premium because you can sell it really fast. Treasuries you can sell anytime. Now, I want you to think about a 30-year AAA corporate bond. Now, right now, that guy is doing about 3.76%. It would have the same R sub F as a treasury. It would have the same R sub M because it's 30 years as a 30-year treasury. And it would have no liquidity premium because you can sell a AAA bond like just instantly. The only difference would be that the AAA corporate bond would have a small default premium. We call this credit default risk. I can actually look at this and say there are currently 41 basis points of risk on the AAA corporate. 31 basis points of risk on the AAA corporate. We can do this for other ones too. We can look at the 20s, AAA 20s against the 20-year treasuries. We can even do it the other way. We can look at 30-year triple Bs against 30-year government. We can create these credit default risk profiles and see what they are. And also, more importantly, we can see how they expand and contract. In recessions, you should see the credit default premium expand. And sure enough, it has been. I did this last semester, and it was running at about 0.32, 32 basis points. Now it's up to 0.41, 41 basis points. Go.
Okay, I don't know if I got lost, but what is the credit default premium?
It's just the difference between, look, a 30-year AAA and a 30-year T-bill, T-bond, will have everything the same. There will be no liquidity premium on either of them, right? There will be the same maturity premium on both of them because they're both 30-year, right? And they'll both have the same skeleton, the R sub F. The only difference is that a 30-year treasury will have no default premium. But a 30-year corporate would have. That's the only reason the two would have a different percentage rate, yield. So in other words, if I take the difference between them, I've actually seen the market's current default premium on that debt. Now, here's the next thing. Have any of you ever heard of the Illinois premium? Illinois debt, regardless of whether it's municipal debt, state, whatever, agency debt, it will have an extra 25 to 35 basis points because it's Illinois, and Illinois is ridiculously risky. Default can happen. So we have what's called the Illinois premium. It's actually not just Illinois. There are other states that have an extra boost in the default premium. Wisconsin has a default premium, an extra boost in its default premium. In Illinois, our default risk is arising because we spend way, way insanely more money than we take in. Most of it to keep Chicago. Interestingly enough, exactly the opposite happens in a state like Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a state that is run by a governor and a legislature owned by the Koch brothers. Super, super low tax rates for the rich. So in both cases, there is not enough money to pay the bills of the state. The state runs up, and so there is a higher risk of default on debt within that state. So we have, 30 states, California, Wisconsin, Illinois, Florida. I could just name off the states. They are irresponsible one way or the other. This is the point that I try to talk about with moderation. You spend, here in Illinois, we need to spend billions and billions of dollars to make these people in Chicago happy. Okay, do we have that? No. Okay, well, let's spend it anyway. Okay, we got Wisconsin, the exact opposite. Our schools are falling to hell. We need billions of dollars to pay to renovate all of our schools, to fix our roads and all that. Well, do we have the money to do it? No. Because why? Because we just did tax cuts for the rich. Okay, great. Okay, we're going to just go with those tax cuts anyway. You see, in either case, the markets are going to punish these states with the extra default premium. Let me give you an interesting example on the sovereign level, at the large level. As you know, I teach for international studies, and I go abroad. I was teaching in Panama this summer. Now, in Panama, they are borrowing money, lots of it. They're not borrowing it from us, from Russia, China, Saudi Arabia. Vast oceans of capital are pouring in. You go down there, literally, skyscrapers being built. One show pops up a couple pop up every month. They're building these unbelievable stacks of overpasses and highway interchanges all around Panama City. The airport, they're going to dig out the Panama Canal, expand it, dredge it down. This isn't us doing it. It's all of these other countries. We are no longer meaningful on the world stage because we're so much into ourselves and our self-time. So the rest of the world is taking over. Give you an example. Panama did an issue for $1.2 billion, a debt issue. Now that was a sovereign debt, okay? So, and it was at the same time, that was 15-year. No, that was 30-year. That was a 30-year. Okay, that was a 30-year debt instrument, a bond. For 30 years, and the coupon was set at 4.5%. It was fully subscribed by the Chinese, the Saudis, and Russians. Fully subscribed, made the loan, bought all of the paper. Now, at the same time, this was a Panama sovereign. Panama sovereign. U.S. Treasury of the same duration at that time was 3.0%. So in other words, there was a 150 basis point default premium on the Panama debt, which isn't too bad. Actually, that's not bad at all. You're talking about Panama. It's surrounded by countries that are basically in hell. Colombia to the south, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Guatemala. These are all countries that are on fire with drug lords, revolutions, communists, right-wing fascists. It's just horrible. There's Panama sitting there with only 150 basis point default premium. Not bad. Now, let's swing over to the other side of the world, to my work with the West Africans. Ghana. Standard & Poor's rates Ghana triple B on the global. That's investment grade. It's not great, but it's investment grade, triple B. So Ghana went out and needed $750 million. And the debt issue was 15 years. And the precious people at the World Bank said, we'll take care of it. We'll set your coupon rate. It won't be a market rate. We'll handle it. So what coupon rate did Ghana end up paying for this 15-year, $750 million loan? Why? Because there was only one player, the World Bank. If they had brought in China, Russia, Saudi, some of the other Arabs, the Canadians, the Japanese, they would have had an excellent. I mean, do you see how 19%, 0.5% interest just bleeds the economy dry? How can they grow when they're paying so much money in interest every year on sovereign debt and they're a triple B rated country? Triple B default premium right now should be running. For this, it was like for triple B corporate in the United States, triple B was running at about 15-year notes, was running at about 2.85%. And on U.S. sovereign 15-year, it was running at 2.30, something like that. So there was about a 55 basis point default premium. But what the World Bank said was, oh, your default premium is going to have to be 17.2%. For triple B, where the default premium for in the United States would have been 55.55, 55 basis points as opposed to 1,720 basis points. That was a rip-off deal. And all it was simply because if there had been more bidders for the debt, China would have offered to buy some. Russia, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Canada, Japan. That would have bid the prices up, and when prices go up, yields go. Spank me, Jesus. But when you have only one player, the World Bank, they set the rate at 19.5%. So you see, the importance here is that the larger the pool of investors, the more likely you are to discover the fair or intrinsic price. And in this case, it wasn't even close to that for Ghana. Gambia is in an even worse position. They need to borrow money, and they got nothing because they don't have investors being drawn in there. The same is true in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm working in the Caribbean, Haiti. Well, Haiti, there's nothing I can do for them. But the bottom line is that you see, this actually comes to life here Because we know very well, you can't tell me the default premium on triple B debt is 1,700 basis points when you can look at it plainly with your own eyes and see that it's not even nearly that. But that's where we have to work, and I'm trying to see if I can put together some groups of students who want to do some consulting, and we can actually see if we can get these economies going in Africa, because they will. Africa and Panama are going to be the next China, so we got to be nice to them so that they'll be nice to us in our old age as a country. That's all I have for you tonight. Go home.